G'day, punters. Welcome to the Victorian Review Show. It's myself, Pistol Pete, joined by Drew, who's coming off a massive collect and a massive result for himself. The first article he's written on the Mailbags website about a horse, it was entitled Best Solution of the Spring Carnival Watch. It came out in mid-July. The price available for the Caulfield Cup at the time was around $61. And he said, to quote unquote, "There is one I feel stands out above the rest." Drew, how was the weekend? How was the celebrations?
Fat weekend, Pete. Really, really pleasing because, while it is good to have your own collect, people were coming out of the woodwork in terms of having bets on at the big prices, which I just love to see, and they've all got doubles, including myself, into it for the Melbourne Cup. So I think we're in for some pretty good days ahead.
Pretty bloody exciting over the next couple of weeks, I tell you what. It was a massive weekend all round, though, for the team. It wasn't, I mean, Rob's cleaned up at Newcastle.
How good was his step back in grade?
Oh, well, that's exactly right. He just basically went straight back to the hometown track and just cleaned up. Not much to follow, obviously, from the card. And so Rob's going to have the week off with the review show, purely because there's not really too much to be following with Newcastle form. And obviously, Dicko just really tied things down, got through a pretty tough meet, let's be honest. I mean, we'll get into the track in a moment, but to get out with a win, I thought was a great achievement on a very, very tough card.
Look, he saw Ciccone like a beach ball, as they say, when the batter's having a bit of a swing. Very good get late, and that kind of fired us up for your stuff in Perth, which 5-unit bet, $5 winner, plus a few big bets outside of that landed. You were having one of your best days ever, I would say.
Tell you what, it didn't start that way. I actually slipped down a couple of concrete steps, almost went through a glass door. Might have, broken my arm if I landed just slightly differently. That was before even the first race. And then I got about four races into it and I thought, geez, this just isn't working. It was only small bets so far, but yeah, I was just overthinking things a little bit. Got back down to the roots and went straight over to the stable, sort of spent the whole time there for the rest of the day. And as soon as I saw Dainty Tess, I sent it through to a few of my mates. I said, "Dainty Tess is a yard moral. I think we've all taken $4.30. She drifts out to 5.60 and just flies home and nails them." So, like, how outstanding.
So what you're saying is you need to almost die every single time from now on your walk into Ascot.
Yeah, exactly right. It's a pretty dangerous place at the best of times, Ascot. The crowd was pumping as well. It's so good to be back at headquarters. If anyone gets a chance to get over here, it's just a phenomenal sort of track when it's up and buzzing, and it's all brand new. It's all just very, very lavish. It's a great place to be going for a few races, that's for sure.
When does the carnival start, just so everyone knows?
So we had a couple of feature races just gone on the weekend, so it really starts picking up from here. But effectively, 2 weeks after the final day in Melbourne, we're over in Perth for the Group Ones. So the last weekend in November, I think,
Okay,
is
so what,
the
that's the
railway.
24th and 25th, I'd say.
Yeah, around that sort of time is railway stakes, and then we've got the Winterbottom and the Kingston Town, three Group One weekends all in a row.
Sensational stuff. I may try and head over for that first weekend to spend it with you.
Sounds outstanding. I mean, look, the railway is going to be a pretty decent race this year. I think there's going to be a fairly good contingent coming across because, why not? It's a $1 million race, and from history, the Eastern Staters actually have a not too bad record in it as well. So we'll see what happens in that front over the next few weeks.
Perfect. Well, let's get straight into it. So, Caulfield, I think there were a couple of touching points that you got to touch on the track. So Jason Kerr, track managers, decided, I would imagine with, he wouldn't just decide by himself. He'd be talking to a few different people, the club, RV, all the others, and they've decided on the Friday to aerate the track. Predictions, for his credit, just so you know, was there was barely 2 to 3 millimeters on the radar for Friday, Saturday. So they had a good four track already. It had a fair, slop already. So they were trying to just keep it in the good four range, which I personally don't agree with, but that's the RV good four for good three. I still think we should be racing on a good three every single day. And if it firms up, so be it. We're buying Australian horses, not internationals. So, we shouldn't be preparing it for internationals. That's just my 2 cents on it. But I've got woken up at 6:30 on Saturday morning, absolutely pissing down. I live 7 minutes from the track. I've driven out to where we see all the internationals. I would urge anyone who can do that on a Saturday or Sunday. It's free entry, gate 4, go via Racecourse Road, and you can sit in the grandstand. Quite a few people you can talk to as well if you're feeling up to it. Worth a watch. You'll learn a fair bit if you know a little thing about horses. And it did not stop raining until about 10 o'clock. And I kept watching that radar, and it kept coming and coming. And I think they had about 10 millimetres of rain. And, yeah, it said slow six, but a lot of people are saying it was much deeper than a slow six. We'll put it that way.
Yeah, so it just makes things going forward. You just have to temper what you're actually taking out of this race, mate. And you just have to really be sure that when you're watching the horses parade next start, that they are still rock hard fit, because that's probably the main thing, because anything could happen coming off a heavy track, that's for sure.
Well, especially I would say where they've had like a really hard slog, and there's a few on the race card where they've gone extremely hard early. I think when they do that, and then I guess once again, it depends where they're doing the hard work, because there is a bit of, you know, talk around that the chutes were probably, you know, drier than, you know, the final 800 metres, for example. So it's just hard to line things up, as you're saying, I think. Just in terms of the tempo on the day, I would obviously suggest that on speed, when there was the tempo to suit, was definitely the place to be. You were not disadvantaged at all one bit being on speed, whereas it was very hard for a lot of the day to come from last in run.
Yep, absolutely. All right, shall we get into race one then?
Yeah, definitely. Okay. Race one, 1,400 metres, three-year-old fillies. I'll just give you the data to start with. Zaziz has led them around very slowly here, 6 lengths slower than class benchmark on the puntingform.com.au data. Had an uncontested lead and has gone all the way. Were there any betting moves here, Pete?
Look, not particularly. There was a little bit of money for Zaziz late, sort of jumping around that sort of $6, $6.50 mark, but it didn't look like it was a particularly strong move for it. It was probably just one of those where, you know, it's going to be settling on speed, so there would be a bit of money for it. There was a little bit of support for the Snowden runner Eways as well. So, but it obviously settled back pretty far back in the field, that's for sure.
Yeah, Eways, I think, was probably one of the better runs of the race. It was just a forgive based on the pattern and how the race was run. I thought, you know, if you're looking for something that could probably improve next start, that'd definitely be it. Colossus loomed, looked the winner, just didn't get past the leader late. I thought it had every chance. Muthira had to be pushed out to get on speed and just, you know, pulled most of the race, so it was kind of a forgive run. Delusions got a Johnny Allen special, barrier 4, and he's ended 3 wide the trip, and just the horse found nothing, so not sure what to make of it there. It was a fair drifter. They opened at about 250, and I reckon it started about 380, so it was a massive drifter on the day. Roma Coney, I thought at the 200, looked the winner. It's just been travelling sensational. Finally got out, loomed, but Zagos has gone straight past it, so I'm not convinced at all of Roma Coney on a surface like this. So, look, it's a tough race to take a lot out of going forward.
Yeah, I think it's going to be the case with most of these today from this card. So we'll just push on to race two. And we saw the bad beat, or the unlucky runner last start, Rainier, finally getting the job done with Bowman on board. And he got, was, you know, reasonably well supported, sort of into favouritism. Beating off Yulong January, who was also well supported in Wild Planet, who drifted right out the gate.
Yeah, so 1,400 metres, Yulong January's led them around only at a moderate speed. We figure showing they went 3.3 lengths slower than class benchmark early. I think Yulong January was a moral beaten. Now, I think he got the Rainier unlucky run that Bricktop's thrown the jockey at the start and just started pestering Yulong January out the front. Otherwise, Yulong January probably would have gone another 2 or 3 lengths slower and statistically would have just won the race. So I think it's just been a really unlucky race if you've backed the horse. I'm 100% talking through my kick because I've been watching this horse when it went up to, I think it was Randwick or Rose Hill, top of head, I know it was Sydney, wet track, and it's just absolutely ran them ragged and just run a really good race. I knew this horse would be suited absolutely by the track, and I just, as soon as Bricktop started pestering, I'm like, oh, this is setting right up for a Rainier to come over the top.
One of those ones where you just want to chop out in play, or you know, do whatever you can to at least break even.
You'd like to, but I wasn't that smart. Wild Planet's run quite well in third. I believe Dicko had that as his play each way in the race, so small win there. Secret Blaze was the widest in the straight, come from the back. Just kind of caught the eye. I'm not sure where it's going, but I think if they step up to 16 or even 1,800 metres with this horse, it may have some more potential to come. I doubt they'll be going to the Derby straight up from 1,400, but you know, you never know with these types.
Absolutely. Race 3, the 1,000-metre group 2. It was reasonably even speed. Super 2's led him up at 1.7 lengths faster than benchmark.
Yeah, look, that horse has to be done, right? Like, it's absolutely knocked up. I'm just not sure what to make of it. Eduardo sat off the leaders and didn't push the tempo, which I thought was very smart. Now, it was still wide, but it wasn't doing, like, he wasn't having to push it. It was just very comfortable. I think this is a genuine group horse. It's a group one, a group two here, and I think it can go to group one level. How it will go at that level, I would probably say at this stage, I think it could potentially be a group one placed horse by this time next year. Could it win? Not so sure, but I think it's got the potential to be a horse on the up. She Knows from off the pace. Look, it's got the best 800, 600, and 200 of the day, I'm pretty sure, or is it second best?
No. It was second best last 400, but yeah, for the 8, yeah. 6, and 2, it was the fastest.
Yeah, so the sectionals don't lie. It was a great run, but 1,000 metres, I think it was in the best position it could be at the turn. It was a length off the winner, and it still couldn't pick them up. So I think Eduardo is probably the better horse going forward, I would say. I think She Knows had the best run she could get and just couldn't get past. Miss Leonidas is a horse I've got a lot of time for, but it's just been doing a lot wrong, getting hot in the yard. It's pulled up with the IPH, just led them around too fast, you know. So not sure what to make of that horse going forward.
Okay. From Within was the winner of race 4, and they, for a change, went very quick early, 7.2 lengths faster than class benchmark.
Yeah, I don't know a lot about this trainer, but I do know when you see a horse that's well fancied like this, from a stable like this, you have to respect the money. Look, as you said, they've run absolutely brutal tempo here, and they've just kept on keeping on from the front. Working from home was quite a good run, actually, in second. I thought it was quite brave from a horse that I really didn't give much chance in the race, so I've got to give the horse credit. And, look, the eye-catcher was creativity, got really far back, and it's actually only gone around benchmark speed. So it's, you know, been 7 lengths off them the first 600 metres, and it's come home 3 lengths faster than class benchmark to claim fourth. It was really the only thing that made up a lot of ground late, so I think creativity is actually going quite well. I'm not sure where they'll go with it, but it is a horse and can be settling, you know, closer to the speed than that. So they've got a few things they can do with it.
Arguably one of the performances of the day was that of Very Elegant, and quite pleasing to the Mailbag Movers subs, because we've backed it quite a while ago for the Oaks, and it's now a firm favourite.
Yes, that was a 2,000-metre three-year-old fillies race. Pressure, really well named horse, by the way, and Yulong Media have led them around a massive 13.5 lengths faster than class benchmark on the puntingform.com.au data. It's clearly they've just pushed a brutal tempo, which it was interesting listening to Johnny Allen post race on Very Elegant. So I'm looking at this horse in a run, I'm going, this thing after 400 meters had none. It's got zero chance because it's pulling. Johnny's fighting it. And it's just kept on going. Now, Johnny post-race said that, look, it looks worse than it is because the horse has a really high head carriage just in run in general. So it does look like he's fighting the horse a lot of the time. So when you see someone's fighting the horse and their head's really high up in the air and it's going back and forth, a bit of that is just the horse's action. So it looks worse than it is, which is quite a good lead-in going forward for a bit of in-play if people start to take it on.
It's not a bad thing for us, is it?
No, not at all. Look, two horses out of this race outside of Very Elegant. Aristia, this is a horse I saw at Moonee Valley, I think 3 or 4 runs back. I think it was second up at the time. And its action is just sensational. It's what you want to see from a horse. I thought, look, I'm not sure where it's going, but I just want to see it getting over a bit more of a trip. And it's proved to me on this run that it's an Oaks horse. I think if Sizzle Me at the 300 or the about 350 didn't come in on it a little bit, stop it for a run. And then I just reckon that he's just stopped whipping at the final 100 metres for about, I don't know, three strides. And I think the horse has stopped finding, and then he's pulled the whip again, and it's matched very elegant to the line from that point. I think if they just sort a few things out with it, it's a main contender. I think Very Elegant gets back in the run in the Oaks, as we've seen, and Aristia will probably have a couple of lengths on it. If Very Elegant doesn't, you know, get the luck it had at Caulfield, Aristia could be off and gone. So I'm not minding the $7 for it. I don't think it's going to be smashed in either, so I can probably just wait to the day to make sure it gets there, make sure it gets the right conditions. Outside of that, Collectible I thought was a very game run. Took a very similar path to Very Elegant and Aristia final 600 metres, where they've just kind of all come down the same path, followed each other. It's come from well back, and look, it's matched at time-wise late, but it's come from a, you know, less taxing run. So not sure where it's probably going to go, probably the Oaks. Wouldn't be suggesting it turns the tables, but it may go around at a decent price for a place.
Sounds good, Drew. All right, race six, Thinking Big down from New South Wales was pretty dominant in the end, although it wasn't a particularly fast run race, was it?
No, two lengths slower than class benchmark early, didn't speed them up until the final 600 metres, where it's come home 3.7 lengths faster than class benchmark to get the win. If they allowed Thinking Big to do this in the Derby, none of them are beating them. But Weir has runners that will be going in there, I think like Samovar or whatever its name is, along with Extra Brute, which, you know, led the tempo for Extra Brute last time out, which got Extra Brute the win. So I wouldn't be shocked to see Thinking Big taken on like happened in the Spring Championships, where it's knocked up and run third because it just wasn't suited by being taken on. So it'll be interesting to see what they do going forward in those type of races. I'm very surprised Thinking Big is that short in the futures market for the Derby off that run. It did not. This is similar to saying there's nothing you can actually take out of the Caulfield Cup with a great extent on a few runners. I think you can say the same about Thinking Big. We already knew it was a good horse. We already knew from the back, the run two back, that if it gets a lead, it can keep on kicking on. And it was not shown up on the day. So I'm shocked it's been 11s into 350 or whatever it is. An Extra Brute is out to 7s. So I don't want to get involved in the market yet. I don't think it's going to adjust itself. I think we can play some really good value on the day when Thinking Big is overbet, as long as we can map some speed into it. Realistically, outside of those two runners, I wasn't very interested in the rest of the runners in this race. There's not a lot you can take out of it. You kind of just have to forgive a lot of them went around.
Absolutely. Speaking of forget a lot of these runners went around, let's talk about race seven. Trap for Fools was scratched early on the race morning, which sent a shockwave through WA racing, because everyone here was pretty much ready to put their winnings from any part of the card on to Trap for Fools and try and build a bank for Perth, and it didn't happen in the end.
No, so it was an interesting precedent they've set here. So obviously Jared McLean's the foreman for Weir, which means he's, you know, he's training out of Weir's bases a fair lot of the time. So he's tried to, you know, do the right thing, and he wants to take care of this horse at the same time, so he's had it in the same stable, but he hasn't communicated that to the stewards, which, to be fair to stewards, that has to be done. Therefore, they have no other option apart from scratching it. They've done the right thing here. Jared's just got to get on the same page and just put in the paperwork. This was a really awkward race in terms of speed. Masky Times led them around at 4.9 lengths slower than class benchmark, so they absolutely crawled. And look, I'm shocked by the tactics on Sir Charles. This is a horse that can lead them around. He's done it in New Zealand. They've decided to take a sit here. I've got no idea why they've done that when Trap for Fools is out of the race. It was clearly their race to dominate, and that's just taken all the speed out of it. Best of Days has had a really smart economical run behind the leader, measured up, got past, and then just didn't want to put the race away, which I was a bit surprised with. It was a head-up versus head-down situation for the photo, and it was a dead heat, which jacked me off a little bit in terms of being on Best of Days, because I thought it was one of the bets of the card at the price. Look, those head-up versus head-down situations where your horse is clearly ahead, they hurt you, but I would have rather get a dead heat or lose this one than in the next race.
Well, let's get into it. Just for those punters who do want to go back and listen, we did record a Caulfield Cup preview on the Friday Arvo for the international runners. And to be honest, actually, some of that information might be quite good going forward to the Melbourne Cup, given the outcome of this race. But Drew, run it through. It's your race, the Caulfield Cup.
Love this race. I would first off start and say that all the information around was suggesting that there would be an extremely a fast run tempo here, right, Pete? And this was one of my points I was trying to make on the Friday podcast, that you look back to Prince of Penzance in the Melbourne Cup, that race was exactly mapped a very similar way. People were saying, oh, there's lots of speed here, lots of speed here. On the day I looked and I said, I don't see the speed. I think Prince of Penzance is going to get a really good sit and it's going to actually be a chance in the race. I'd said in my race day, this is going back, what, a couple of years now, but I said it is the top Australian chance when you consider preferment was $13 in the race. I thought Prince of Penzance was a better chance based on if it got the right scenario. And that's what I was seeing here for quite a few horses. Now, did I expect them to go this slow? Hell no. No one expected this slow, but there were people saying this would be brutally run, where you just couldn't see the leader. So I'll go through that really quickly. So High Aces led them up significantly slow, 4.7 lengths slower than class benchmark early on the puntingform.com.au data, and even slower than middle stages. So they were running 14-second sectionals at times. Like, it was just farcical speed, especially when you've got Ace High, which in my opinion was zero chance on a slow track, which is just something to look at, punters, when you're doing your bets on these days. You're getting $14 about a horse that does not handle a wet surface. It's rated a soft six, and the times are suggesting it's slower than that all throughout the day. So I think you've done your money cold if you're betting Ace High, Chestnut Coat, Soul Impact, and I think even the Taj Mahal, its wet track form is significantly worse than what it's done on dry tracks. So betting it to win was also, in my opinion, a bad bet. Now, getting back to the tempo they've run, that's what happens when the natural runners like a Taj Mahal and Holmesman try and take sits. Now, I think Lloyd was trying to do the right thing. He thought, okay, Soul Impact will try and push it on, but not on a slow surface, they weren't going to try to. Ace High, they weren't going to try to. So it was really left up to a slow speed in the race in the end. Quickly touching on Best Solution, missed a kick, had to be kicked up, sat deep the trip, found a spot, settled, got going at the perfect time. Paddy Crosgrove has given this a 11 out of 10 ride. I'm not sure how the horse won. I know it's an out-and-out stayer. It should not be suited by a sprint tempo. Take a bow, Paddy. Brilliant ride, brilliant win. Thank you, mate. Like, honestly, that's one of the biggest thrills I've had in racing, and it was just a sensational ride. I don't want to talk too much about this race, but there are a few I think we'll probably have to cover. So Holmesman, run of the race, every chance. I think he was never getting past Best Solution. I don't care what everyone says. Best Solution wanted to go another 800 metres and wanted to keep fighting. He was very happy when something loomed up to him and he said, oh, well, now I've got a challenge. Clissa Maher, or Moore, however you want to say it, significantly better away on the day than I expected. Got a better spot in run, not suited by tempo. Not sure it's going to get the Melbourne Cup trip, but can't rule them out from this stable. Giretto was a really good run fourth. I still don't think it's as good a horse as Best Solution, but it may be better suited to the 3200 if there's a really strong tempo. Look, I think the Caulfield Cup was its race to win, so I'm not sure what to make of it going forward. The Taj Mahal never won on wet. I think James McDonald's tactics to take off the 800 were perfect. And he's stolen fifth there. It was a really good ride. Kingswell Dream, absolute forgive run. Knuckled at the start. Never winning. Still a great run. Maybe you got to keep looking to see if it'll go to the Melbourne Cup and if it should get the distance, which it should. It may be over the odds in the markets based on a fail in the Caulfield Cup. As long as it recovers from that knuckling, because that's like twisting an ankle. So, you know, it can take a little bit to get over. Young Star, the second best final 200 of the day, only going late when it got over the line. It's no surprise what it did based on what it did in the Winx race. It did similar things in terms of very strong sectionals off a slow tempo. I think it's still got to prove itself off a hard tempo in a race like this. So I'm not wanting to jump into shorts next start. Chestnut Coat, forgive it. Never suited wet track, slow speed. It's drifted 20s out to 50s in the Melbourne Cup, and I think it's well overs. Sound check, same thing. Back, not suited, slow tempo. Also drifted in the Melbourne Cup to over 50s. Both those horses are, you know, they're secured runs. They're proven horses. They're proven over the 3,200, and they're proven off a firm surface, fast tempo, which is what you usually get at a Flemington. So do with that what you will. I'd be saying that they run better than 50-1 shots on the day. And finally, Jon Snow should have been scratched. I feel sorry for Sam Quaid, who took the horse in the Case Bet Cup, but Sammy's already paid up his case, and Betfair merch is on his way to him and Big Will, who had Best Solution.
Very good. How good. Yeah, apologies to Sam Quaid. I mean, you never want to see that, your horse breaking through the barriers before the race, but anyway, what can you do?
That's where you've got to lay off on Betfair if you actually were on the horse, because that's a perfect example. If your horse is getting vetted behind for throwing a shoe, there's something potentially wrong with its foot. If your horse has broken through the gates, it's just exerted more energy, you don't want to be on it. Like, this is a horse race that you need everything to go your way. And that's why Best Solutions win was so good. It had nothing go its way, and it still won. I like that in a horse.
Absolutely. That horse is a nutcase, and that's what you want. Just one that's not going to give up at any stage whatsoever. Well, look, like I said, for those who really wanted to get an idea of what the internationals form were coming, or form lines were coming to Australia, have a listen to that podcast that Drew and I recorded on Friday. It's now there for public listening. It will just give you a good overview of all those horses in that race, and sort of can give you a little bit of background without the view or the veil going across of the Caulfield Cup, which obviously a lot of them weren't particularly suited by. All right, race 9, the Tristark Stakes. Shamook got away with it, basically led around at an early speed and got the job done.
Yeah, this is a horse that got the job done too back in Sydney for the Gaybots. Look, it didn't do a lot the next start, but may not have had it all run to suit, and just had it all run to suit here. Everything from on speed's compounded, found nothing. Booker, sensational previous week, found absolutely nothing, which wasn't a help for one of my multis. Look, all of the horses in this race were pretty poor, apart from Shamook, Invincibella, who's run on really well, and Aloysia, who's caught the eye. So fastest final 400 metres of the day. This is a horse going places, and the place it is going is the Maya 1600 metres at Flemington, where it has already been a mover's bet. Our people are already on, and I think it's already into $11 at one place, $8 the rest. So if you're thinking of having a little bit of a futures bet, you could have worse bets than Aloysia there.
Yeah, good to see the horse return to some vein of form anyway. Anything else out of that race?
Look, I think Furyk, who is actually one of the horses that went over, I think, and contested the Winter Bomb, and I'm pretty sure, and it ran second to Vidora.
Yep, yeah, it did.
It's got back, and look, it's run a pretty good race. I think if it's more prominent next start, it can run well.
All right, we'll go to race 10, and back to some actually decent speeds here with Ciccone running around just under 10 lengths faster than Benchmark, and knocking off Dreamforce and Parast.
Yeah, Old Mate Music Magnates just chucked him around here at a stupid speed. Ciccone's got the perfect run off him and just nailed him, just too good. Didn't have the bad luck like the previous week for new stable Johnny Sadler, of all people.
Hey, there he is.
Yeah. I don't guarantee, but I reckon Dicko's probably not looked at it as hard and seen that it was Johnny Sadler's stable now. He just sees the orange silks because, geez, you'd have less confidence with it being with Johnny, but it's only been there like a couple of days, so you can't take the shine off, can you?
No, you just would have seen Linda get up on board. That's all you want to see.
With these spurs on. Go, Linda.
God, jeez, Linda Meacham's spurs is the stuff that dreams are made of.
I know what you mean. Other runners in the race, Old Mate Tom Melvin, how that's gone around $4. Well, look, I just couldn't understand it, and it's also missed a place as well.
Speaking of the Winter Bottom, Drew, Tom Melvin's been nominated for the Winter Bottom over here, Group 1, 1,200 metre race.
That just shows that I think the owners may be having too much of an influence on what the horse does. It clearly needs... You look at it, its probably best run was the 1600 meter Kennedy Mile second to Shillelagh last year, you know?
Yeah.
And it's just been beaten by a really good horse from the same stable that's been given a much more forward run. It's never had been sat that far forward ever again, Shillelagh, and it hasn't won since, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
Outside of that, I thought Perest was super suited by the tempo. It's run okay in third. I'm pretty sure it was third. Look, not sure what to make of it. Burning Front, I think, is just done as a horse. As we touched on earlier a little bit, Peaceful State, best 1,200 metres, best 1,000 metres of the day. I don't think it was there to win from all the information I'd had on the lead into it. It was $4 out to $6.50. I think in 2 weeks' time, it's set for the Kennedy Mile, and it should be landing me my 50K multi.
Baby.
Pray. The horse had a bit of a bumpy jewel at the top of the straight. It costed a little bit. Clearly beat home those from back in the field. It was snicked, I think, back to drier in 2 weeks' time, up to 1,600 metres. It's just, it's one to follow. You're getting 50, it's now 26s into 15s for the race, and I would be expecting it to be shorter on the day.
Alrighty. Very good.
Just a couple of viewer questions to go along with as well. I'll just lead us in with one of the really good ones. Not that the others are bad, but I really like this one, and I think you can add a fair bit to it, Pete. Josh from Twitter, perhaps shed some light on thoughts on edges over the market that are out there for people to perfect and make their own. So Dicko as a mounting yard, Traffers Trials, Duros Internationals, then the data guys. What other edges could people and punters try to learn or adapt? I'd just quickly add in there, I think walking the tracks is something that very few people do. And while you won't get an edge every single time you walk a track, I think it gives you a bit of clarity. I think it can give you an edge on certain days when the track managers either got it wrong or when rain has come or not come. So there can be days where you can walk a track and you can say, holy crap, this inside is extremely great. I want to be on things on speed all day, and it'll take the market 2 to 3 races to adjust. So by then you've made your mozza. I think speed mapping and expected speeds are probably underplayed by the market. I think while it's good for everyone to say, here is the one scenario I expect is going to happen with the speed, whenever I go into a race day these days, I'm now giving myself different scenarios of what could happen with different leaders, what percentage I expect that to happen, and then I'm framing different markets around those speeds that are occurring. So I'm looking, look, if possible, I really want a horse that's versatile that can go off both speeds. Best Solution was a prime example of one that got it done off a speed that I didn't think would suit, but it still did. So that's the type of versatile horse you really want to follow forward. But there are horses where you just know need a fast tempo, and if that's on, it's there in the finish. Mossendale's a prime example of that. You go back over its form. When it's run well, it's been off a hard tempo because that's the type of horse it is. Grunty's exactly the same thing. So on the days when you've got no real tempo there and they're favourites in the market, you just have to take them on. Pete, what do you look for?
Yeah, I agree quite heavily with speed maps. And as you said as well, part of that's also profiling jocks when they get to the front, because some of them are naturally not very gifted when it comes to judging speed. So they can go really, really slow, they can go really, really fast. And then there's a couple of them that are just pretty much bang on, get the horse comfortable, you know, not riding it like it's a bloody washing machine, and then just giving the horse every chance. And that's if you're on one of the better horses in the race and it's out the front, that's obviously a good place for it to be. The other one I'd probably throw out is just getting to know a stable. It's probably, you know, more applicable over east than it is over here. But if you can actually profile a stable and look for their patterns in terms of, you know, do they get their horses to peak first up, second up, third up, fourth up, whatever it is, certain courses, certain distances, all those sort of things. If you can start profiling one stable, it sort of cuts down on the amount of time that you're spending trying to, you know, view everyone in a massive collective pool of horses. And you can just start to find a few edges. It means you can bet less more or less frequently. And then when you do bet, you can bet more heavily. So you can really try and take that edge to another advantage.
Look, I think there's a massive, like, jigsaw puzzle with what can be done. And I think as you advance in this game, you slowly start to pick it up. I think what we're trying to do here at the Mailbag is exactly that. Like, we've actually brought on Nico Noonan because we really trust in his trial information. That's helped us a lot. He had a sensational week a week ago with three standouts at all one. That helped us significantly. It helps us with the Mount Yard Mail, but it helps us with everything else that we're doing. That's just one of the many pieces of the puzzle that you try and just bring in and just make yourself better, realistically,
and
right?
You can't do everything. You can't do everything. And when you're doing your form, if you do it well, less is more. If you try and overwhelm yourself, you can head fuck yourself pretty easily. So just, if you find you're good at something and good at analysing one part of the race or one part of the data or whatever it is, just focus your attention on that. And then when you see an advantage in the market, that's when you hit it.
Exactly. I'll just go through a few of these questions. I think there's one there for Pete that I've sent you as well. Chris, aside from the obvious best solution, which horses from the Caulfield Cup impressed you going to the Melbourne Cup? Thoughts on Red Verdon's chances after Saturday's run? Kind of touched on the others. Red Verdon, I think when you look at its form, it has never won a group race. It's a place getter at best. It's really hard to take that type of horse in a Melbourne Cup, in my opinion. Its last two wins are on synthetics, so just its whole profile, I really kind of want to take it on. And its ratings internationally do not have it better than horses like Muntaha, Withhold. Even Yucatan actually has a better overall rating than it. So, yeah, it's a really tough one to do. Kim Miller wants to know if I'll be on the Cup preview show this year with Dicko. Yes, certainly will be. No doubt about it. Be touching on all the internationals. Jason Lyle, thoughts on Yucatan heading into the Cup? I think this is probably one of the hardest horses to get a grip on because its international rating was so much lower than you wanted for a horse going into a Cups campaign. Now, they can improve off that. I think Withhold is a similar horse, actually, to Yucatan in terms of ratings. But what it did at Caulfield is undeniable. It's a serious horse, and it's hard to take it on if they sit more forward with it in the Cup. I don't want to see it going out the back, so I'd like to hear what the tactics are before I have a good lash. Pete, did you have any questions that you wanted to put up?
There was probably one other there that that I thought was quite pertinent, and it's not the humorous one from Rick, but Jesse Way would like to know when you're doing your form, what you use to assess the predicted early tempo in the race, i.e. lengths above benchmark. And this is a really difficult question, but I think it's a very interesting one at the same time.
Yeah, look, I think there are a couple of things you got to do. So I think you got to watch you got to identify to start with who are the horses that are going to be on speed pushing the tempo, right? So that's your starting point. Once you've identified that, you then go away. I think you look at the videos to start with to know which ones are pushed out to get us lead at all costs. So you kind of got to know if a horse is just going to sit up there, balance, and just keep going naturally, or if it's a horse that has to be pushed out. Because I think when a horse has to be pushed out, there's a tendency for it to over race and to keep on going along with it. So that can put a bit more of unnatural speed in. And you just got to consider from their barriers then what's going to happen. Look, I find the punting form data just gives me a lot of clarity around the class benchmark that this horse has done in terms of its early speed. I understand what generally it can do. I mean, I was talking about that on the pod about Holmesman, that if it led in the Melbourne Cup, it actually was not going generally faster than the benchmark that would be expected. So I wasn't expecting them to push it overly hard with Holmesman, and we've Taj Mahal's instructions, which pretty much said we're not going to lead, that's where it took a bit of speed out of it. So look, there's a lot of guesswork involved, but you got to try and give yourself a few different scenarios on it.
Yep. And just quickly on another question on speed, Jake would like to hear your thoughts on tempo and how certain tempo benefits certain horses. What can jocks do midfield or at the back if the front runners are walking, or if you're on the fence, you've got basically no fucking chance. So
that's where you need a catapult.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, you need a jock with a lot of guts and timing. And we saw that with J-Mac. I think we touched on that in terms of, you know, him trying to put his horse into the race, knowing full well that it may not necessarily be good enough to do it from that position, but you're certainly going to do a lot better than if you just sit there waiting and it turns up to be a 400-meter sprint.
Yeah, and I think that's the problem with the Aussie horses as well, in terms of the Europeans really do have a strong final 800 in them, and they can even go from 1,000 out. I mean, that's how, when you've seen a lot of Lloyd's horses that have come over and won first or second up, they've just gone from the 1,000 metres, and he just knows that his horses are better over those distances, so it's no surprise. And we actually, I'm pretty sure we touched on it from the pod that we thought it would be a fairly strong 800 to finish the day with Taj Mahal and Holmesman, and even Best Solution really wanted that battle, because that's where these horses just keep finding and finding. Whereas ours, not so much. I mean, even a horse like Yogi that's going around on Wednesday, it's constantly just having to be pushed along to just keep picking them up.
Do we have anything on Kurt's question with regards to Weir's cattle, why they seem to perform either poorly or very good on the same day? I would say it's probably, you know, statistically you'd have to go back and check it all, but I would imagine it's probably something to do with days between runs. I know one of the owners over here of Leonardo Da Vinci was basically of the opinion that they had gone one run too many before they even went to its last start. But the Weir camp, for instance, or they do have a pretty good record of being able to keep horses going for longer, but there is a tipping point, as there always is. So there's probably a combination of those brutal run races, and you just have to have a look at the early speed and so forth, and then days between runs, because you still want to have enough of a break between those runs.
Yeah, this is something I'd like to see a bit more data on, and I think I've actually talked to Dicko about this one a little bit, because with the Weirs, they just present them so well, and even deep into prep. So it's really hard to get a gauge on them. I mean, when you're doing the Mounting Yard Mail, Dicko's in a hard bind there, because when you have the Weirs just presenting them like this, you got to have them on top when they look so well, and they may be over the top. So I know that he's being a bit more cautious with these ones a little bit lately, and I actually think he's been nailing them quite well in terms of the Weirs when they are a little bit over the top and not going as hard. So I think that comes exactly into what you're saying, days between runs, but also how deep they are into a prep.
There can be a very fine line between a horse physically when it's at peak condition and then it's just gone over the top. It could be something very, very subtle that you have to really be paying attention. It could be pretty difficult when you're seeing 20 horses or 16 horse fields as well, where you're trying to devote as much time to each of them individually. But you can pick up on a couple of little factors that just give you a clue that the horse might not be like really there, so to speak, on the day.
Yeah.
And Drew, how many lappies did you get at Kittens?
I like how Rick's thinking on this one. It's interesting, the people you meet at Kittens, I have to say, on a Saturday night. Quite a few people from racing end up in there, you know, after races.
Familiar faces. What? I mean, look, I mean, you've got to expect that, Drew. When they've all followed you in on Best Solution, you know, that is the only way that you're going to be able to celebrate, surely.
I'll be honest and say I actually did go there on Saturday night. After going to the A-League game, we were trying to kill some time before the Man City game came on at, I think, about 1 a.m. So went down there, had a good chat to a few blokes that we knew that were there, and that's the main reason we went down. No lappies for me, unfortunately, mate. That's not the way I roll there. I'm just there for the drinks and for the bants.
There for the racing intel, obviously.
Look, there was actually some pretty good racing intel going around, I'm not going to lie.
Oh, outstanding. Right, I might have to divert one of my evening dinner plans for a racing debrief at Kittens.
Well, Friday night, well, this Friday you're down, so we'll have to see. I'm not sure I can do a Friday night and then still kick on for Cox Plate Day. It is a pretty big day.
Oh, there's nothing to worry about in Cox Plate Day. It'll be easy.
What, tip winks?
Nah, not even. You know, you just wait for the track pattern to emerge and you just pen half the field, make sure your quaddy's on, get the right horses, fit forward in the right part of the track, and you're done.
Well, I'm looking forward to a bit of the internationals on Wednesday as well. I know we'll be looking at the pregame pod tomorrow.
Yep.
On the 5 for 5 podcast, which is $5.99 for anyone who wants to get involved. It's per week. And you're getting so much strong value, plus you're getting my international thoughts as well on there. So, you know, get involved.
Absolutely. The 5 for 5 pods have been flying as well recently. I think I might have tipped 5 winners or something on ours on the weekend for WA. And obviously yourself, Drew, just putting everyone into a good frame of mind with Best Solution being your second pick, and obviously the best of the internationals.
Yeah, look, and for those who didn't listen, Kingswood Dream was on top, and as we know, it was a zero chance after it knuckled, which
I think that is something that a lot of people don't look much into from horses failing going to their next runs, because I don't want to see it backing up in the next week. I'll put it that way. And that's why I don't think it's going to be in the Cox Plate. I'm pretty sure they've said it's not going to go, because they want to give it a bit of a rest time before the Melbourne Cup.
Which I think is fair enough. All right, Drewzy, yeah. Anything else to touch on before we say good evening and sayonara?
Nope, apart from I'm looking forward to Withhold winning this Wednesday.
Withhold winning the Geelong Cup for Roger Charlton, isn't it?
I'm pretty sure you're right. It's right. Flying.
There we go. Drew, it's been great.
Pete, thanks. Looking forward to it, and see you Friday.
Will do, will do. I'll be obviously doing Ascot on Wednesday. Dicko's at Geelong. I won't be doing Ascot on Saturday because I'll be in Melbourne, but I'm sure we'll be doing a pre-game pod for it either way. We might even be doing a pre-game pod in the same place. We'll wait and see.
I think we will be. Looking forward to it, mate.
All right. Giddy up. Go well, punters.
Have a fat one.